Hey, everybody. Josh Wigler here with some summer movie podcasting for you here on Post Show Recaps. It is July 30th as of this recording, and we are playing catch up with a few of the summer's blockbuster releases thus far. Ghostbusters, Star Trek, and Jason Bourne. Listen to our Ghostbusters and Star Trek podcasts by heading over to postshowrecaps.com or by subscribing to the podcast at postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. With that out of the way, let's talk about Jason Bourne. Jason Bourne is in theaters, and we are just getting started talking about it here on Post Show Recaps, continuing coverage of the summer movie season. We're playing a bit of catch-up, but we are on time here for Jason Bourne. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by my co-host, who I hope has more than 25 lines of dialogue on this podcast, Mike Bloom! Mike Bloom!
Is that who I am?
Is that how you're going to answer all of my questions on this podcast?
Who am I?
Maybe. I don't know. Stern looks.
Exactly.
Yes.
Grimace.
Wince.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good sum up. Obviously, podcasting is not a visual medium, so I feel like we might have to do what they do for the blind sometimes in terms of provide visual recaps or audio recaps of what we're doing visually.
So you're going to describe what you are physically doing throughout the podcast in the form of answers to what we are talking about here.
Yeah, so we're going to go back through. I'm going to record a commentary on top of this podcast where I'm narrating what we're doing as well, just to give everyone the full experience. Film is a very visual medium, and I want to make sure that everyone has all of their senses encapsulated.
All right. Well, if you don't understand why we are spending our opening moments talking about Jason Bourne's lack of dialogue, that's because Jason Bourne doesn't say a whole lot in this movie. That's kind of the famous thing that is going around the new Jason Bourne movie. Matt Damon returning to his action franchise for the first time in like 10 years, I think.
Almost. The last Bourne Ultimatum was released in 2007.
So close to 10 years. Very close to 10 years. Not 10 years since the last Bourne movie. We'll get into all of that as well as we start talking this through. But first of all, Mike, how are you? First time talking to you here on Post Show Recaps in a long while.
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's been a very fun, very busy, but very fun summer so far. I'd say, speaking towards like the summer movie crop, feel free to disagree with me here. It's been a weird summer in terms of film. I feel like there have been some that have been doing well, but for the most part, I think a lot of films have underwhelmed a lot of people. And also, I don't want to compare this to a movie like Finding Dory, but there are a lot of revisits to franchises that are, in some cases, long dead and gone.
That being said, there's a lot in common, or at least one main thing in common between Jason Bourne and Finding Dory. They both have major memory problems.
Yes, they're both voiced by Ellen DeGeneres. That was a fun fact.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Yeah,
yeah,
reboot.
Actually, I'd say like Matt Damon is sort of like the Michael J. Fox of the Bourne franchise. It was initially Ellen DeGeneres a la Eric Stoltz.
Yes.
But it really didn't work out with the chemistry in the first movie. So
I heard
went
that
to
Eric
Damon.
Stoltz was one of the people they were considering for the Bourne legacy.
Yeah, yeah, but unfortunately, he didn't want to deal with the Arctic wilderness, so they took out a Renner.
Oh my God, Finding Bourne! That sounds like a great movie. Maybe
Finding Bourne.
Yeah, that could be the fifth proper Bourne movie.
Just him underwater the entire time.
Yes, yeah, it's just like all in his head from when he's underwater in the first movie. It's all prequel.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be like a St. Elsewhere-esque ending, and it turns out it was just an underwater fever dream the entire time?
That's what it was. But to your earlier point, I think that that's right. I mean, this is the third of three summer movie catch-up podcasts that we're doing here on Post Show Recaps. You can check out my recap of Star Trek with Rob Sesternino, my recap of Ghostbusters with Sarah Freeman. Those have all been launched on this same general time frame. And really, the pervasive thing that Rob was saying about Star Trek and Sarah was saying about Ghostbusters, and I don't fully disagree on either count, is they're fine. Like, they're good.
Yeah.
There's been nothing that has really blown me away this summer yet. I really did enjoy Jason Bourne, even though I'm seeing a lot of people describe Jason Bourne online as one of the more boring movies of the summer. If that's how you feel, then man, this has been a pretty sleepy summer in that regard. I think that there's something to that for sure.
Yeah, though I will say, I guess going towards my general opinion of the movie, I definitely enjoyed it as well. I mean, is it, if we're comparing like the high octane action franchises that you and I have talked about on this podcast,
it is
no Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious kind of steers into the curve, pun unintended there, of being as ridiculous as it can be. Jason Bourne is definitely more grounded, but that being said, I still did enjoy it. I mean, I'll admit, in preparation for this podcast, I have watched or rewatched in some cases all four previous Jason Bourne films in the past week. So
this is how much Mike Bloom loves you guys. He went and he rewatched every single movie in the Jason Bourne franchise just to be prepared to talk through Jason Bourne. I think you probably did the right thing in order to enjoy this movie at maximum capacity, because the Bourne movies, as I'm sure you have now taken away, are dense. They are very, very dense and sometimes very hard to keep track of, and certainly tough to remember after 10 years away from the proper series.
Absolutely. I was very happy. I mean, and we're going to spoil the rest of the movie from here on out, so just
spoilers,
a warning here. I mean, to have Nikki Parsons, Julia Stiles' character, return and then get killed off like 40 minutes in was very interesting, considering that I had just seen her in three previous movies kind of rise up from being kind of a red shirt that worked in the CIA to becoming basically the female lead of the franchise.
The Chloe O'Brien to Matt Damon's Jack Bauer.
Yes, exactly. Though Jason Bourne's probably a little less angry than Jack Bauer is in relation to his female compatriot.
Probably true. A lot less, damn it, Nikki, we're out of time. That doesn't really happen.
Exactly. So looking through the franchise over the course of a week, it is interesting to sort of see that. And to also, you know, the Bourne franchise, I will admit, is a little formulaic, though I won't necessarily put a negative connotation to that word. I feel like you know what you're going to get when you walk into the movie, and I feel like that's totally fine. But, I mean, we do a lot of washing our hands every film in terms of, let's sort of not really remember the previous characters that existed in the previous film except for a few key characters, and bring in a completely new crop of people. I mean, Jason Bourne features Tommy Lee Jones, Alicia Vikander. There's like a whole new slew of people that are coming in, and I'm going to assume that next Jason Bourne film, those people will be presumably washed away and we'll get a completely new group of characters brought in. There's really no carryover in terms of a reliable ensemble from film to film.
At least not from 3 to 4, but at least from 2 to 3. I mean, Pam Lundy is still hanging around.
That's true.
You know, I was wondering, where's Pam Lundy? Why are we not even talking about Pam Lundy? Is Pam Lundy alive? Is she dead?
She's alive. She is in one pivotal scene in the Bourne Legacy, the Jeremy Renner 2012 Black Sheep of the franchise.
Oh my.
Where she's being brought in for questioning for this whole Blackbriar incident. Because if we remember at the end of Bourne Ultimatum, she kind of betrayed her allegiances to the CIA to sort of work with Jason Bourne. And she tried to leak the files.
As you do.
It turns out those were unsuccessful attempts, but now she's kind of being held in contempt for doing so. But that's all we saw of her. I agree. I was very interested that we didn't see her this film, considering that she was sort of the main antagonist in 2, 3. Her motives were a little more gray area, but she's been a pretty big character in at least 2/5 of the franchise so far. I'm very surprised that she wasn't shown at all, and instead we're focusing on these completely new characters in the CIA.
All right, well, let's start talking through Jason Bourne, but before we do, I really think that it's instructive to remember as much as possible about the Bourne franchise's past.
Are there going to be little jittery yes. flashbacks with weird cinematography yes. to it to make
yes.
us remember?
You'll describe these scenes in vivid detail. But no, Mike, having just gone through the Bourne franchise, I think that you will attest to this, we've already said this, I think you really want to be as fresh up on that stuff as possible before just diving into Jason Bourne. I think that this movie really leans on those movies as if you had just watched them, or that you just remember everything that happened in those movies. These movies are really steeped in their own continuity, for better and often for worse, I think. Mm-hmm. Can you give a little bit of a recap of the Jason Bourne legend as it has been told so far heading into the fourth Matt Damon movie?
So Jason Bourne, nay Daniel Webb, is a man who was entered into a CIA program where he was basically trained to become this version of a super soldier, essentially. He has a very particular set of skills.
Skills that make him a nightmare for people like you and me.
Exactly. It involves a lot of kicking ass and also speaking multiple languages.
And turning magazines into billy clubs.
Yes, exactly. He's very MacGyver in that he's able... It's basically a combination of Liam Neeson and Taken and MacGyver in that he's basically able to... And Jason Bourne, he's going to use a pot as a shield, which I thought was very handy.
Not
but
the plant.
Yes. So essentially, the plot of the Bourne films, at least starting out, are that there's this man who suffers from amnesia in that he sort of wakes up in the middle of, I don't know, the Adriatic Sea on a fishing boat, and he has no idea who he is. But at the same time, he is being hunted by a government organization that turns out to be the CIA. As he goes on his globetrotting expeditions, he finds out that he is this super soldier named Jason Bourne and that he is being targeted for every movie for a variety of reasons. The first is that, you know, he was supposed to assassinate Mr. Echo, who plays an African former dictator, and he was not able to do so. The second movie, he is set up, I believe, in a murder by a bunch of, like, Russian crime leaders who had it out for the CIA. And in the third one, he's actually kind of still on the run from the events of the second movie. But basically, every movie features Jason Bourne on the run from some sort of form of the CIA. There's always a different operative that's brought in to lead the organization every movie.
It always goes very well for those operatives, too.
Of course.
Like, they definitely are never outed as traitors. They're never basically forced into positions of having to commit suicide in order to protect their reputations or not suffer the consequences of something.
Exactly. They all drive off into the sunset with their pension packages in hand. Everything is
just golden parachuting to freedom.
So in a typical Bourne movie, you can expect a lot of rooms in computer control centers. And it's been pretty fun to track that franchise in terms of the technology that's been used. You can expect a big car chase at the end. And essentially every movie, almost what happens in terms of speaking towards the formulaic aspects that I previously spoke about, is that there are obviously other people that are part of this sort of super soldier assassin program. And the CIA will often send one or two or sometimes even three of these people against Jason Bourne. So where the action of this action thriller kind of comes from is the fact that Jason Bourne will be in some sort of location, some sort of exotic location, and then an assassin will come after him, and then there'll just be an extended chase sequence going on. And it almost always ends with some sort of standoff between Bourne and the CIA. And just when you think the jig is up for Jason Bourne, Extreme Ways by Moby plays,
yes,
and he gets away scot-free.
Such a genius move.
Exactly. For those of you that are not aware or are big reality TV fans as much as Josh and I are, you will know that if you watch the Korean reality TV show The Genius, I guess they're also fans of the Bourne franchise, as they will utilize that music sting whenever there's a big twist that happens during one of their episodes.
It's pretty amazing. I had forgotten that this was a hallmark of the Bourne franchise, that you don't know that the movie is over until you hear Extreme Ways. Once Extreme Ways starts playing, you know it's time to wrap up.
Yeah, Extreme Ways is basically like the totem of the inception,
yes,
that is Jason Bourne.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I think that that's a pretty good recap. Treadstone is a word that you hear a lot in this movie. That is one of the shadowy organizations of super soldiers that exists. That's what Bourne was born into. That is the program that
he was born this way.
Yes, he was born this way. That is the program that he is a part of. There's another program called like
Blackbriar, which
Briar
is
Manor.
Aren't they at River Run, the Blackbriars?
Yes, that's exactly right. The Blackbriar Rebellion. So it's fun. You know, it's definitely a little complicated, a little bit dense. Every movie, it seems like Treadstone or whatever equivalent of Treadstone gets exposed for the shadowy nemesis force that they truly are, and then some other version of it pops up in the next movie. But somehow you will never go through a Bourne movie without hearing the word Treadstone like 100 times.
It's almost comparable to like S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra in a way from Captain America Civil War, in that there's almost infighting within the government. You'll see this specifically in Jason Bourne, where Heather Lee, who's played by Alicia Vikander, is a CIA operative. But that being said, she sort of disagrees with what Tommy Lee Jones as Bob Dewey and what they're trying to do to try to bring this program down. And essentially with the Black Fire Treadstone outcome is the program that's used in the Bourne Legacy. What all these programs are essentially about is kind of just like, well, we're just going to bring down Jason Bourne. They're essentially kind of taking apart the block fort that they've built and saying, you know, let's kill off all these super soldiers. Let's make sure Jason Bourne gets brought down because he's basically exposing everything to us. So it's very clear that Jason Bourne is pretty much public enemy number one from the get-go, from moment one of the first film.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, you mentioned the Bourne Legacy for a hot second there. We've talked about it. We've been poking fun at it a little bit along the way. Can you explain what a Bourne legacy is?
Well, it's not much of a legacy, but essentially, I guess the history of it was that Matt Damon said, like, I'll come back for a fourth Bourne film as long as Paul Greengrass, who I think had directed and maybe written the first three films.
Was not the director of the first one, but was okay. The director of Ultimatum and Supremacy.
But he said, you know, I'm back if he's back. Greengrass, unfortunately, I think he was working on another film at the time, and so Damon wasn't signed on. But I guess Universal still wanted to keep the hot streak going that was the Bourne franchise. And it cooled a bit with the Bourne legacy. Essentially, the Bourne legacy is almost existing tangentially to what's going on with the Bourne Ultimatum specifically. Call it your Tokyo Drift, if you will. Though that might mean that a Bourne legacy character will get brought in at some point in a later statement of the franchise. But
is there anyone from the Bourne legacy that you could see finding their way into the Bourne proper?
I could see Rachel Weisz is the female lead of the Bourne legacy, and she plays like a virologist slash scientist who was working with Treadstone slash Blackfriar. And so I could see her get brought in some sort of way, shape, or form. Though, again, it'd be interesting to see her get brought in and not Jeremy Renner. So this differs a little bit in that Jeremy Renner does not have amnesia. He knows he is an agent. And this is he's part of a thing called Outcome, which really is more of a super soldier thing in that they're actually taking, like, genetically enhanced drugs to increase their abilities, to make them super strong and super smart. And essentially, after the actions of Jason Bourne in the Bourne Ultimatum, the CIA decides we're going to shut down Outcome. So they start killing off agents. And essentially, Renner's, whose name is Aaron Cross, not to be confused with Alex Cross, the aborted Tyler Perry cop franchise.
Oh my God, yes.
He's basically on the run. Speaking towards the Bourne legacy in general, it's a little more polished. I think we can say one of the trademarks of the Bourne franchise is the shaky cam.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, they do not use shaky cam at all. Their flashbacks are not done in that weird streaky style that we had just talked about. It's done very similar to the rest of the cinematography. I thought it was, even just looking back on it, watching it a couple days ago, I thought it was fine. I thought Jeremy Renner was actually really good, but the story itself just did not seem Bourne-esque. You know, it wasn't Jeremy Renner trying to remember who he was. There wasn't too much chasing going on. He spends the first 40 minutes in the Arctic tundra with Oscar Isaac, which doesn't even seem like something out of a Bourne film. So I thought it was like a fine movie, but it didn't really fit in with the rest of the Bourne franchise.
And isn't the thing that Jeremy Renner's character, isn't he, like, actually kind of slow, and he's on this medication, or he's part of this program, and it makes him super smart and super awesome, but just, like, as a baseline, he's not that at all as a real person?
He even admits to Rachel Weisz that his army recruiter, I think, had bumped up his IQ by 15 points so that he'd be allowed to take place in the program in the first place. So it's interesting, though. I think actually one of the things the movie has against it is that there is a point when, like, he's going through withdrawal. One of the reasons he seeks out Rachel Weisz is because he's running low on this medication and he wants to, you know, make sure he gets it in ample supply. And we see a little bit of it, but it really doesn't impede his abilities that much. He still is ass-kicking Alex Cross slash Jason Bourne analog. So maybe that was one of the detractors of the film. That being said, I know they said we don't intend it as a reboot. It's just another chapter of the Bourne franchise. It kind of came off like a reboot.
Yeah.
And I know people did not take too kindly to it. So when Greengrass and Damon came back, albeit 4 years later, I think people were rip-roaring to see it, Jason Bourne grace our screens once again.
Well, I think that was the thing. I think that Universal held out for the day that Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass would agree to do another Bourne movie. And I believe that the two of them, it was, you know, this pact of, like, I won't do a Bourne movie without the other guy. And it was a lot of conversation about, we're waiting to find the right story. There isn't a story for us to tell. They went off and they did all their other stuff. And as you said, Universal wants to keep the Bourne franchise alive, maybe even needs to keep the Bourne franchise alive in order to hang on to rights. I'm not sure about that. The Bourne legacy exists. Jeremy Renner is the title character. I don't think it's received fantastically. I don't think it's a complete disaster. There are plans in development after the Bourne legacy for a follow-up to that story. There are rumors that Jason Bourne and Aaron Cross are going to cross over.
Ooh, a crisscross?
A crisscross over, a Bourne crossover. That is something that was supposedly in the, you know, at least in the ether, especially when rumors started circulating that Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass were returning to the franchise. Then Jason Bourne starts actually taking shape, and I believe, as it stands, there will not be a Bourne Legacy sequel now that Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass are back in place. This all being said, Mike, you know, you have watched these three, the three principal Bourne movies, plus the fourth Bourne, the Bourne Legacy, in very, very recent times. The amnesia plot of who am I, who was I before I became Jason Bourne, that all gets resolved for the most part in the Bourne Ultimatum, in the third movie of the series. He finds out that he's David Webb. He finds out that he volunteered for Treadstone. He feels enormous guilt about that because he has this huge pile of bodies in his wake that are actually kind of his fault because he signed up for the Treadstone program knowing full well what it would mean. By the end of that third movie, is there more story to tell with Bourne? And is Jason Bourne, the movie that's in theaters now, is that the right story to follow up that original trilogy with, do you think? Is this the one that was worthy enough to get Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass out of retirement in terms of the Bourne franchise?
I mean, to answer your first question, I would even argue that I don't know if the Bourne story needs to be continued after the first movie. I think once he kind of figured out who he was, a big chunk of that mystery was solved. And tangentially speaking, actually, I'll say one of the things I really love about the Bourne franchise as a series in general is that it sort of takes the action chase sequences you'll find in a James Bond movie and combines it with this almost mystery element of every movie will explore what has Jason Bourne done in some sort of form of his previous life that he doesn't remember. And to have that sort of mystery hovering above our heads, I think, is something nice. It makes you feel like you're not just watching chase scenes for 2 hours. You're trying, it's towards a larger purpose. That being said, you know, I feel like Bourne Supremacy didn't have a great follow-up in terms of like the flashback, where the flashback reveal in Bourne Supremacy was, oh, he had killed this guy and his wife. It wasn't a murder-suicide as the media had painted it to be. I will agree, Bourne Ultimatum went kind of back to the roots in terms of Bourne was looking specifically towards how did he get recruited to Treadstone in the first place? Why did he go in? And it turns out that he had volunteered for it, to the fact of where, you know, you have Albert Finney describing what the job was all about. And as a sort of test, he ends up shooting an unknown man in the corner just to prove how dedicated he is to the program. Jason Bourne focuses on his family, which is weird. This is sort of like the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade of the Jason Bourne franchise. It's all about...
Except they couldn't get anyone of Sean Connery caliber to play his father. They got Greg Henry. And no disrespect to Greg Henry, who I have loved for a long time, going back to season 2 of 24, at least when he played Wallace, one of the great mercenary adversaries of Jack Bauer. But come on, we could have done a little bit better than Greg Henry for Matt Damon's father.
Though I will say, if the dad was alive, they probably would have invested in a better actor.
Well, now that's ruled out, unless we're going to have, you know, in the fifth Jason Bourne movie, it's going to be Greg Henry is suddenly running around if they wanted to do some sort of weird twist.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could have. I mean, I don't want to spoil the Fast and the Furious franchise, but there was a character that we thought had died, and it turned out 2 movies later that she was indeed alive and suffered from amnesia and another Bourne kind of similarity. I mean, Greg Henry does die in his arms in the flashback, so that might not be possible, but I mean,
don't think it's happening, yeah.
But considering that he does come from the world of the CIA, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, essentially the flashbacks of Jason Bourne focus around, Jason, I have information about your father and how he might have been involved in the Treadstone program. Initially, Jason thinks that his father kind of betrayed him. He flashes back to the last conversation he had where he says, you know, I made a mistake or it came at a cost before he dies. Jason thinks that alludes to the fact that he basically for 50 pieces of silver kind of sold him out and put him in the Treadstone program, but it turns out to be the opposite. Once Greg Henry had found out that Bourne was in the program, he actually threatened to expose it to try to get his son out of it and died as a result. Once we find that out, it's kind of just about Bourne getting revenge on not only the man or asset, if you will, who killed his father, but also the organization that had set the entire thing up. So it's a lot more revenge-fueled, I feel like, than the other films, in that the central mystery is solved actually a lot quicker than it usually is, and so the rest of the movie is pretty much Bourne just getting vengeance on those who had wronged him and his family.
Well, I feel like the second one has to be kind of vengeance-fueled as well. You know, his love interest is killed off in the first few minutes. Not unsimilar to how Julia Stiles, who is a huge deal in the franchise, is just taken off the board. Very unceremoniously.
Though Julia Stiles, at least, like, I wouldn't say she sacrifices herself, but at least she, like, is of some use. She tosses the encrypted flash drive. Marie is a fun character in the first film. She sort of is like the regular Joe Schmo that Bourne takes along for the ride.
Yes, yeah.
But she sort of gets unceremoniously. She's sort of like the equivalent of like when they killed off Vanessa Kensington in Austin Powers: The Spy Who Shagged Me at the very beginning.
Are you saying that Marie was a fembot?
It could have been.
Oh my God.
We're probably like one step away from her being like, oh, she was actually a CIA-trained operative the entire time that was planning to kill him at some point.
That is going to be the next Jason Bourne movie.
And Jason Bourne's going to run naked through the streets while happy music plays?
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. And he is going to have a very long pee at a certain point. But
The Bourne Who Shagged Me.
I think that movie has a big vengeance element to it. Of course, this one does as well for all the reasons you've explained that Jason Bourne is really reactivated because he finds out that there's something weird going on with his own family history involved in Treadstone, and maybe it kind of absolves him a little bit in terms of the guilt that he's feeling of, I signed up for the Treadstone program of my own volition. It turns out that he was recruited for it, and his father was like, hey, no, don't do it, and then his father is made to look like he's been killed in a terrorist incident, and that only galvanizes the man who is currently known as David Webb and then becomes Jason Bourne to become Jason Bourne. So I think that maybe does this sort of retroactively wash his hands a little bit and make him a little bit more of a cleaner figure. I guess I think my big problem with this movie, with Jason Bourne really going back to that well of filling in the gaps of his memory, is I think so much of that is resolved by the end of the third movie. And now you're really just extending the ball further in sort of a weird retconny way here in the fourth movie. And if the idea is to continue the Bourne franchise, with Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass continuing to do these movies until they're bored, until they don't want to do them anymore, can we just keep going back to this idea of there is more and more of Jason Bourne's backstory that he just quite doesn't remember? Is that going to sustain this franchise, or is it a better move to really get away from that stuff and focus more on plugging Jason Bourne into situations that are going to be deserving of his attention and his skill set? Not necessarily him as, coming back in from the cold, as so many people want him to do in this movie, and rejoin the CIA and rejoin the program, but for him to pick and choose things that seemingly matter to him in the moment. I feel like that's probably the direction that I would like to see these movies go in, and I feel like the fourth movie, if this is something of a reboot or at least a reintroduction to mainstream culture, you know, it has been 10 years since Matt Damon played this character. I think for it to come so steeped in its own continuity, that felt like a mistake to me.
I feel like we're only like two Bourne films away from the flashback being Jason Bourne revealing the origin of his tattoo.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Bai Ling is getting involved, and once she's involved, it's no good.
I mean, you could subtitle every Jason Bourne film Stranger in a Strange Land with all the globetrotting he does. I would agree. I think that there's an interesting way to sort of use Jason Bourne. I don't want to keep going back to Captain America as a comparison, but I find myself doing so. There's something interesting about like Captain America, the Winter Soldier, right? Where it's, okay, we're going to utilize, where it's this one character is kind of grappling between two different areas of, I'm trying to help support the government that I've worked so hard all my life to work for, while at the same time I know that there's shady stuff going on and immoral things going on. I think an interesting installation of the Bourne franchise would be, let's say Heather Lee calls him and says, like, we need you to help bring another rogue agent down. there's still, you could still incorporate the flashback element of like maybe later on Bourne realizes that this agent was like someone from his past and that they actually were friends and that he was basically recruited to go kill his friend and then they're going to both turn against the government again. I feel like there's something that there's a happy medium where I feel like you can utilize Jason Bourne without having to rely on the flashback, but still kind of use them in a way to at least have that central mystery element remain, because that's something that I personally don't want to let go of. I feel like if you let go of the central mystery of a lot of stuff that's going on, because otherwise, this movie is very transparent. I mean, we reveal our big CIA bad almost from the get-go every single film. Our characters don't realize who they are until later on, but we pretty much know what's going on with, you know, Dream Deep or whatever the organization was called right from the beginning of the film. So I still want some sort of mystery element involved, but I do agree there are sort of starting to be diminishing returns with these flashbacks in that there's been a lot of information that's already kind of been painted through in terms of his timeline. There's only a little bit of blank wall left.
So if you didn't know all of this backstory going into Jason Bourne, do you think that you'd enjoy it? Like, do you think that you could walk into Jason Bourne completely cold, completely unknowing of anything that happened in this franchise before and just sit down and watch this action movie? Do you think that you could have a good time at the theater?
Yeah, I mean, I think the action set pieces are not terrible. Again, I would say that Fast and the Furious have some that are just more exciting and fun, but these are still like very well shot. I mean, you have a freaking SWAT truck drive into the middle of a casino at the end of this film. I feel like that's something you have to remark on.
Yeah, I would dial it back and say like from not terrible to like, these are pretty fun. I mean, they're pretty scary. They're pretty destructive. They're pretty improbable, especially in what you just mentioned, the big scene in Las Vegas toward the end of the movie where Jason Bourne and the asset are racing through the streets of Vegas. And Jason Bourne's tiny car lands on top of the asset's SWAT truck, and he gets, like, crammed into the top of, like, the marquee.
Oh, yeah, let's also be aware, Jason Bourne should have died at least, like, 15
so
times in this
many
franchise
times.
At this point.
I mean, again, you keep mentioning Captain America. I don't think it's unfair. This is, in its own way, this is a superhero movie, because there are so many times that Jason Bourne should have died. Not the least of which is this moment where his car gets wedged up against the top of this plaza as the SWAT truck is plowing into a Vegas casino, and he is somehow okay. He has a little bit of a limp, but he's mostly all right, and that car is squished. There isn't even an airbag that pops out, I don't think.
Yeah, I think my favorite actually might be after. So he goes to London at some point to kind of confront this one former Treadstone operative who had kind of been keeping tabs on him to find out more about what his father had him do. And the asset finds him, and Jason Bourne actually kind of surprisingly flubs his way through an escape where I guess like a cord gets like caught around his leg.
Yeah.
And he swings upside down and smacks his head into a stone wall, and he lies there for like 5 seconds and just gets back up and walks away.
He's
like, dude would have so much brain damage at this point. Granted, he probably has a lot of brain damage considering his amnesia, but dude would probably not be able to walk after that.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. There's a couple of times, I think two times in the movie where he just like wipes out hard. And like does not get up for a few seconds. I appreciated that at least. What was surprising to me, I mean, it's movie magic, it's plot armor, but like he's down for a solid few minutes on at least in the time where he's in the bike chase through Greece with Julia Stiles and they wipe out. He's on the ground for a while and feels like there's a few opportunities for somebody to just pick him off, and it just doesn't happen. Again, plot armor, but I did like seeing Jason Bourne could get his ass kicked in this
movie. I thought the bike chase was in Greece 2, not Greece.
It was in Greece 2. I'm sorry.
It was the car chase in Greece 1.
Yeah, the Greece lightning scene. It was fun. I liked that stuff. I mean, the action in these movies is so entertaining. And like you said, sort of the MacGyver aspect of Jason Bourne's fighting skills. Matt Damon did a Reddit AMA in the lead up to Jason Bourne coming out. Really great AMA if you guys want to go and seek that out. We can post it in the show notes. But one of the things that he talked about is how Jason Bourne, in a lot of ways, you know, he gets lumped in the conversation of all of these super spies that people talk about in pop culture, many of them with the initials JB, from Jack Bauer to James Bond. And Jason Bourne is often compared to James Bond, but really he's kind of an anti-Bond, according to Matt Damon, that, you know, Bond always has the gadgets he needs. He has the right tool for every situation when he is sent off on a mission. Bourne has to find that stuff in the moment. And the most iconic version of that, I think, is in the first movie when I forget who he's fighting. I don't know if it's a known actor or not, but it's that apartment fight scene where he has to roll up a newspaper and basically use it as just like a fighting stick.
Well, I actually think it might, I forget if it was in the first movie or the second movie, but yeah, it's, and the guy pulls out like a knife or a blade and Bourne combats that with a rolled up newspaper.
Yes.
Which again, on paper or on magazine probably would not work, but Jason Bourne is able to use it to his advantage, is able to not only disarm the man, but kill him in the bathroom of his own apartment.
Yeah, it's really, really badass. There's just a lot of really badass stuff that's throughout these movies. I think for that reason, it's worth seeing. Like, if you're a Matt Damon fan and you haven't seen the Bourne movies, I feel like you owe it to yourself to check them out, because it's, I remember when Matt Damon was enlisted for this. I remember seeing the first few trailers for The Bourne Identity and being like, Matt Damon, an action star? Really? Yeah. This movie looks so dumb. It just did not, it did not look like anything that was going to make any kind of sense. And then I saw it and I was like, holy crap, they did a really good job. But that was at first, Matt Damon seemed like a very improbable action star. But he really is great in this role physically, I think. And this movie, not just like the big action scenes, but they shoot it in such a way and they build to these moments in such a way that when, you know, he has a couple of these scenes where Jason Bourne is making money on the road by being like a fighter, by being basically a pit fighter. And he's just like hyping himself up very quietly while everyone else is putting money on the Serbian or the other guy or whoever it is. And Bourne will just walk up to the guy and just deliver one punch and that person's on the ground.
He's one punch man.
He's one punch man. It's fun. I like that. I think that they do a really good job with Jason Bourne physically. Even if I'm a little tired of the plot of these movies, I think that the physicality, the action, all of that stuff has always been top-notch through at least the Matt Damon versions of the Bourne films. I have to admit, did not check out Bourne Legacy. Don't think that I will.
I'd agree. I think that Matt Damon is actually, like you said, I think at the time a lot of people were like, the kid from Good Will Hunting is going to lead an action franchise. Like, unless it involves doing math and cleaning floors, I don't know if that's a possibility. But no, it turns out that even, you know, at this point, there's a good 14 years between the first Bourne film and this one. He's still got it. And I think as much as we joked in the beginning about Jason Bourne just brooding a lot and giving a lot of confused, quizzical looks, I think that Matt Damon does put in a really good performance here, and I think he is kind of a likable character. On the Hamster Factor, which is a podcast I do with AJ Mass about movies, we talk a lot about this idea of audience analogs, where a lot of films will sort of have a blank slate character who sort of serves as a form of the audience to kind of encounter these things at the same time as we are. I'm thinking about the main character in David Lynch's Blue Velvet, for example, is a good example of that. And I feel like Jason Bourne, even though he's learning more and more about himself, is still kind of serving as that audience analog throughout these films of, here's a guy who like knows sort of what's going on, but doesn't really realize it. And actually, we know more information than he does, as I alluded to before. We see more stuff than he does until later on in the film. But that being said, I think he does a great job of kind of serving as a form of us. You know, he's asking the right questions. He's, you know, figuring things out and exacting the action however he wants to. He does this badass trademarks of, you know, meet me alone in this crowded plaza. And then he ends up always escaping the people that are tailing him no matter what. So even though, again, we're going back to the well multiple times, the water in that well is so sweet that I can't help but go back every time.
Wow, sweet water.
Yes, very sweet water in that well. I don't know what they put in the ocean or the river.
I love that sweet water. All right, well, one of the things across the Bourne movies, we've touched on this as well, there's some hallmarks across these movies in terms of character types. You have, like, the grouchy, douchey CIA guy. You have somebody on the inside who's probably going to give Bourne a helping hand. Mm-hmm. And you have, like, that other rival assassin in play. So we have a few of those characters here, of course, in Jason Bourne. Tommy Lee Jones is the new bureaucrat in this movie playing Dewey. How does he hold up to the Chris Coopers and Brian Coxes of the world?
When I initially
and the David Strathairns. I don't want to short shrift David Strathairn here.
When I initially saw Tommy Lee Jones was cast in this, I was like, what? I was sort of like the opposite of Matt Damon of like, why are you like wasting this Oscar laden talent? You know, because I do agree that like these CIA operatives are a little one note in that they're guys in suits who want Jason Bourne down now by any means possible. That being said, Tommy Lee Jones, I feel like, brought a level of, whether intentional or not, like, tiredness to this role of, like, here's a man who just seems very resigned but very in charge. He does take sort of a turn as the movie moves forward, and once you kind of realize what his true intentions are, specifically when we talk about Riz Ahmed's character with Deep Dream and how he's trying to utilize that to spy on everybody, I think he stacks up to the others. Whether he exceeds them is a little on the table, but I think he definitely does not do a bad job here, considering the material he's given.
I think that the comment about him being tired, I think that's just Tommy Lee Jones.
I had a feeling. I didn't want to, you know, maybe he's being very method of like, yeah, he's really tired.
I won't go into the full story, but I did interview Tommy Lee Jones once for the day job, and it was an experience. And he is about exactly as you would expect him to be, a very grouchy guy. And I think that that is conveyed really well here as Dewey in this movie. You know, that is really just, you know, Tommy Lee Jones in vintage Tommy Lee Jones mode. Like, you think about, very famously, you know, his Oscar-winning role in The Fugitive of, I don't care, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
This is essentially, like, I actually thought about this during the film of, like, this is essentially, like, his character from The Fugitive, but just like 30 years later. He's still trying to do the exact same thing.
Well, also, and now being like a corrupt POS. Like, he is also like, you know, it's not like he's hunting down Richard Kimball for justice. He is now hunting people down and kind of doing it sort of very cynically and maybe not exactly on the level. You know, his big plot in the movie is he wants to use Riz Ahmed's Deep Dream is the name of the organization.
Sounds like a Kingdom Hearts sequel.
Deep Dream. Sounds like something else. But Deep Dream is this, you know, this program that's going to be like this revolutionary social media thing. And the guy who is the founder of it is really not into the surveillance aspect, but he's being funded by the CIA. And Dewey is going to use it to do some serious surveillance. And obviously there's going to be a turn where the guy is going to call Tommy Lee Jones out. So the big final set piece of the movie is built around Tommy Lee Jones being like, well, I'll just assassinate him. You know, if he's not going to play ball, I'll just get him killed. So it's fun. I think it's fun to see Tommy Lee Jones in a role like this. I do agree, a little bit sleepy, but I kind of think that's just Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, and there is an interesting, I feel like when Bourne confronts Dewey in the very end of, I guess, his life, when he ends up going into his hotel room and just kind of sit down and talk things out, and Bourne is convinced of, like, you know, I can still be a good person, and Dewey's trying to convince him that he can't. You could see the exhaustion there, but I almost feel like it works in that scene, in that Dewey has been chasing down Bourne for a long time, presumably even before the actions of this film, and now that, like, his one plan, his big masterpiece has been thwarted, he's now just, like, sort of ready to see it happen. You know, he doesn't want to die, but if he has to, at least he'll, like, go out knowing he's tried his best to bring this guy down. Speaking of which, I mean, not to speak too much about, like, the big set piece of ExoCon, which I'm sure we could talk later about, but man, why would you bring the spy to the spy convention? Like, here's a microphone, here's a bug, go crazy. Just handing them out like free samples. I feel like they were definitely playing with fire there by having that con exist in the first place.
It seems like a curious choice.
I don't even, like, I'm assuming that's not a real thing. I'm assuming the NSA would have some sort of input of, maybe we shouldn't have a convention in Las Vegas where people check out equipment that they can use to spy on other people.
You would think that SpyCon would be held at a more discreet location than Las Vegas.
Exactly. The invitation to SpyCon just says location. You'll know.
Yeah. The invitation self-destructs in 5 seconds after opening.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I thought it was fun, and obviously, you know, Bourne will use one of those pieces to sort of get the one up on Heather Lee at the very end, but I don't know, if we're talking about Bourne MacGyvering himself, he kind of got a layup here by saying, like, hey, hello, sir, in the nondescript hat, would you like a bug to spy on people?
Yeah, welcome to SpyCon. Here's your SpyCon swag bag filled with spy material.
Yeah, exactly. For any purposes that you'd like to use in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, anything that's going to be very helpful in bringing this movie to a very firm landing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's really great. What did you think of Alicia Vikander as Heather Lee? Alicia Vikander having a hell of a career right now, hot off of an Oscar win, was in a lot of other great stuff. Ex Machina, if you haven't seen that yet, you really should check out. She's been having a great ride recently. How did you feel about her as Heather Lee, sort of the helpful CIA operative that is working with Bourne towards the end of the movie, though, of course, ultimately is always after her own self-interest, as these people are wont to do?
I thought it was a very nuanced performance. She did seem very cold for a majority of it. You know, I'm thinking of like the one scene where she's just like, it's the nondescript hacker typing on your computer to make things happen in the nick of time type of scene. But she has a very stone-faced demeanor to a lot of that stuff. But it is interesting to see kind of that demeanor melt when it turns out that she kind of has a soft spot for Jason Bourne and that she believes, as you just said, that he can be rehabilitated. She's reading through these files of Treadstone, which talks about, you know, he could still be brought back into the program. And this sort of puts her in opposition with Dewey to the point of where Dewey's going to undermine her when they're in London of saying, oh no, Asset, you go actually take out our men and go after them, and we'll just sort of BS that, oh no, they must have gotten lost or something. I will say she might not be my favorite of the female leads. She's no Pam Landy. I did like Marie as well. Julia Stiles, I thought she was fine, and I think she, sort of like Heather Lee, I feel like her skills were, she was basically written in to utilize her hacking skills. To have someone in Bourne's corner who has those skills, I feel like is something valuable, especially in the climate of today where everything is basically digital. I actually was a big fan of Rachel Weisz too in the Bourne Legacy. I'd say both Renner and Weisz actually brought some more peaks and valleys to their performance than I feel like some people do in the Bourne franchise.
Yeah, so you're not feeling like Alicia Vikander really brought it in that same Jeremy Renner, Rachel Weisz kind of way.
Yeah, though, again, if we're assuming that she's going to be kind of brought back in a Pam way for future films, maybe we'll get to see a little bit more about her. That being said, she kind of served her purpose in this movie. And I will say it is kind of fun that for the big action movie tropes that exist, and even the discussion that's been happening this summer about female roles in films, that this is a franchise where the one who really is kind of the smart person, the big tech person, is always a female character.
I like her name, Heather Lee. I just feel like that's a good way to describe someone. Like, she was acting very Heatherly today.
Yes, exactly. Though nothing involving a chainsaw, unfortunately.
Nothing involving a chainsaw at all. How about Vincent Castle as the Asset? He's the Black Briarcliff Manor assassin who is working on behalf of Ironhand, which I guess is the name of the resurrected form of Treadstone and Briarcliff and all of these different organizations. I mean, all of these names kind of feel like they're Pokemon. Like, yeah. Treadstone feels like a Pokemon.
Treadstone.
Black Briar sounds like a Pokemon.
Yeah, I would have said that even Paul Greengrass sounds like a name of an operation.
Yeah, and in certain films, Matt Damon is the only thing that a Pokemon like Matt Damon can say.
Yes, exactly. Some movies he looks rather like a Pokemon, yeah. At least when it's boiled down to more marionette-like forms, I would say.
I would play Pokemon Bourne. That sounds fun.
That'd be fun. You don't remember what Pokemon you have, though, until a certain point of the movie.
Very, very difficult.
Pokeborn?
Yeah, very difficult to play. What did you think of Vincent Castle as the Asset? That's another one of these kind of central pillars in these movies, is the guy who is always rivaling Bourne in the badassery department. Clive Owen really pioneered this role in the franchise in the first one. I think that he is probably still the high watermark of that type of character. What did you think of Vincent Castle in this role?
Yeah, I would definitely agree that Clive Owen, as I believe his name was the Professor,
yes.
Which I had wished that they named all the other operatives after Gilligan's Island yes. characters. Vincent Castle would have been Marianne.
Yeah, obviously. Be afraid of Marianne is what I was going to say.
That would have been amazing. Just Tommy Lee Jones like, bring in Marianne!
Bring in Marianne!
I thought Vincent Castle sort of did a serviceable job as well. I think that when you struck a chord was by saying like Clive Owen was definitely the best Asset, in a way that Clive Owen has this very interesting conversation with Bourne in the first film where they sort of debate of, you know, what's their purpose? Are they doing exactly what they're, for lack of a better term, born to do, or are they doing this purely on their own volition, which sort of sets Bourne on this course that really culminates, as you mentioned before, in the Bourne ultimatum. The Asset is a little bit more of a boiled down character. It seems like he just purely wants revenge on Bourne for being the one to out Treadstone and Black Briar in the first place. But I do feel like this asset more than other films, and the term the asset has also been used multiple times. If you watch the Honest trailer, which just came out for the Bourne franchise, they talk about how they always use the term the asset to describe, like, this enemy operative from every film. But this guy in this case is just named the asset. It seems like he played a much bigger role than previous assets have, where, you know, he gets a call like a third of the way into the film and he's pretty existent in there until maybe like what? Like 15 minutes before the film, Tommy Lee Jones dies before the asset dies.
Oh, yeah. No, that's like the big buildup is this big battle between Bourne and the asset. But you'll be the one who can really speak to this better than me, having seen these movies so recently. I don't know if Bourne has ever had such a personal relationship against the assassin that he's been fighting. I don't remember. You can tell me in Bourne 2, does he have like a big vendetta against the assassin that kills Marie?
No. I mean, that's it, basically. It said, oh, you killed Marie, now I'm going after you.
The asset, we find out, this guy who always, he has a grudge against Bourne, but Bourne has a grudge against him because the asset is the man who killed Bourne's father.
Yeah, my name is Jason Bourne, I think. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
The six-fingered asset.
Yeah, so, which makes sense. This guy is very, very good at shooting, apparently.
Yes.
I thought he was good. I mean, I'll admit, he was written in a way, purposely so, that I was cheering when Jason Bourne shines the light in his eyes and kind of foils his assassination attempt, because this guy seems almost too perfect. I will admit, one of my highlights of every Bourne film is having Bourne kind of wail on every asset, just because it's a lot of fun to watch Bourne kind of bear down, knuckle brawl with these guys and really show off his fighting skills. So I thought the asset, sort of like Alicia Vikander, did a very serviceable job, though, as you said before, not my personal favorite.
I think that you touched on something that I think is really cool about those types of characters. I think this movie established really well is going back to those moments where Bourne can just like knock a guy out in a single punch. Somebody who looks incredibly, incredibly tough, and Bourne is able to just knock that guy out in a single blow. For Bourne to go up against somebody like Vincent Castle, the asset in this movie, and they are really, it is a drawn out fist fight between the two of them. It really is a testament to how tough Bourne's opponent is. Once you have the baseline set of Bourne is capable of knocking people out with nothing more than one punch. But when it comes to going up against somebody who is a Blackbriar assassin, it might take a little bit more work. I think that's a really cool way of just establishing that these guys are pretty badass.
And the fight scenes are also across the franchise very fun as well, in that, yes, there might be a little bit of cartoony sound effects. I feel like the Foley artists have a heck of a time trying to provide noises for all of those smacks and punches. But the fights almost never use music, which is something that I feel like not a lot of action franchises do. I feel like the Bourne franchise kind of prides itself on being more grounded, and albeit, even though we just talked about how Jason Bourne is kind of immortal, a little bit more realistic in terms of, you know, how the fights specifically are choreographed. You know, these guys are super soldiers, as I said before. They're not going to go down in one punch, but to have it exist in pure silence, I feel like almost heightens the effect of it, where we don't necessarily need the stinging violin music to show that this is a really a climactic moment. By having it just the soundtrack just be the sounds of the fight, it really kind of puts you on the edge of your seat as a result.
I think so as well. Having just seen this movie and having just seen the four previous Bourne movies before seeing this movie, how would you rank them? Have you thought about this at all? How would you stack up the Bourne movies? If you had to do the official Mike Bloom Bourne power rankings, what would that look like?
Yeah, all right. So I'll do the first four first, and then we'll see where we can slot in number five. This might be a little bit of a hot take. I might put Identity above Ultimatum. I know Ultimatum was like a big piece to kind of finish off the franchise in a way, but something about Identity and having Bourne really just sort of wash up on the shores on a boat's deck and really just try to figure out who he is from there, I think was a lot of fun. And I feel like it was much more contained. Like, as you said, Bourne Ultimatum is actually pretty dense. I would argue it's arguably the most dense film in the franchise, where there's a lot of characters, there's a lot of things going on, they're hopping from country to country more so than usual. So I would put Identity 1, Ultimatum 2, Supremacy 3, Legacy obviously 4. In terms of Jason Bourne, recency bias, I'm definitely trying to figure out whether it's better or worse than Supremacy. I don't think it's better than Identity or Ultimatum, but I do think that Jason Bourne, the film, might be more memorable, even just from the performances, than Bourne Supremacy. So it might be recency bias, but I'm going to slot Jason Bourne in at number 3 overall.
It's always that sophomore slump. Always hard to be a solid number 2.
Exactly. We're going back to the Bourne Who Shagged Me again.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly.
Rob Lowe comes back.
Yes, exactly. Is there any argument, like, people who say that The Wire Season 2, often maligned in terms of The Wire rankings, but there are people out there that are like, you know, The Wire Season 2 is not only actually pretty good, but it's the best season. There's a contingent out there. Is there an argument for the Bourne Legacy, do you think, that there are people who are like, you know, Bourne Legacy, it's actually probably the best Bourne movie?
I think it's people who, like you said before, that are tired of the whole amnesia trope. If they're like, we just want to see this guy fight against a government organization, that's essentially what the Bourne Legacy is. It deals with more sci-fi elements, too, in a way. Like I said before, we're dealing with drug enhancements. We're dealing with, you know, Alex Cross. Now I'm the one that's conflating the two
yeah,
franchises.
Chris Cross.
Aaron Cross.
Don't cross his names. It would be bad.
He has a virus that sort of enables him to become a pivotal part of the plot as well. So if you're more into those types of things, then I can understand why The Bourne Legacy would be more of your cup of tea. Otherwise, I feel like the elements that the Bourne franchise has going for it really exist in those first three films and in Jason Bourne.
Interesting. Is there anything from The Bourne Legacy that is, you know, teased at or glimpsed here in Jason Bourne that you could see, or is it completely unmentioned?
They mention from time to time, like, hey, they turn into a news report and they say Jason Bourne has exposed the Brackbriar program on, in New York, which was the big climactic sequence that happened at the end of Bourne Ultimatum. And as I said before, I think the CIA decides to shut down Renner's program as a result of Bourne kind of exposing everything. So it definitely leaves its footprints on that movie. In terms of the inverse, There really isn't anything from the Bourne Legacy that's brought into Jason Bourne.
Right.
If we see Pam come back after that one scene we see in the Bourne Legacy, then maybe that's sort of the impact it will have. But otherwise, Jeremy Renner and Rachel Weisz are, spoiler alert, on a Philippine boat, just like in the middle of the sea doing nothing. So we might see them come back at some point, but they pretty much had their own adventure separate from anything else that was going on.
Okay, so probably don't expect any Bourne Legacy action in a future Jason Bourne movie. What would you like to see if the Bourne franchise continues with Matt Damon and presumably Paul Greengrass along for the ride? What more would you do or want to see done with Jason Bourne as a character?
The interesting thing about this movie to me is that for the first time, they mention things like Edward Snowden, and they talk about, you know, they incorporate startups. And I feel like this movie specifically really tried to be a product of its times. I know that the other Jason Bourne films had taken place between 2002 and 2007, where technology was not necessarily, you know, I feel like it really hit the ground running, like, right after 2008 with all of the, basically when Apple kind of revolutionized the market there. But I found it interesting that they were able to kind of incorporate some of these elements and really the question of using these devices to butt up against the ideas of American privacy as kind of a center point of the movie to kind of guide its moral compass. As these issues kind of become more prevalent in the world today, I kind of would like to see those issues take impact in this franchise as well. Again, especially as things are getting more digital, maybe Heather Lee is going to play more of an important role. Maybe having a simple chase in a car driving down the stairs is not going to have as much of an effect anymore. I don't want this to turn into a lost segment of the Hackers franchise, but I feel like there are certain elements of the world today that you can't ignore that would definitely change what the spy franchise is at this point.
Yeah. No, I'm interested. I'm interested to see where they go from here. Like I said before, and I think you and I maybe we disagree about it a little bit, is I would love to see Bourne move away from the treadstone of it all. I would love to see Jason Bourne just pop up in some, you know, country that is needing of his services and he just goes to town. I would love to see Jason Bourne just be sort of this wandering warrior who goes and, you know, fixes things that he deems fixable or that he deems worthy of his attention. and just have him get away from some of this angsty, who am I type of stuff. I feel like that's resolved at this point, but I feel like that's also probably too intrinsically tied with the Bourne franchise to wish it away. I think that that's always going to come part and parcel with this stuff, and it's just not the reason that I like these movies. It's actually the reason that I'm sometimes not super fond of the Bourne movies, but everything else it's got going for it, from Matt Damon being super awesome, to the action scenes, the fight scenes, the car chases, being really memorable and unique and expertly done. I think that's all standout stuff that does work really well. I just think that the story is a little tired for me at this point.
And, I mean, Matt Damon might be looking to go back to this franchise. Specifically, if I don't know when you saw the movie, Josh, if you saw a preview for Matt Damon's next project, The Great Wall, but he might be looking for a little bit of a redemption story soon.
Well, yeah, that is a tale for another time, I think. I thought that you were, because I didn't see that trailer, I thought you were going to mention Ben Affleck's The Accountant.
I didn't see that one.
That looks to be trying to rival the Bourne franchise.
Did you see a trailer for JGL's Snowden movie?
No, I did not, but I have seen trailers for it.
Yeah, because that was showing as well when I saw it, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty on the nose, specifically when they mention Edward Snowden as well, which I would admit one of my like pet peeves when it comes to franchises that sort of take place in our world but don't is when they like pick and choose what realistic things have happened to kind of bring into the world. Like, I can't remember if they mentioned 9/11 in the Bourne franchise, but they just happened to mention that Edward Snowden happened,
right,
which is just sort of like, it makes sense with the actions of the film, but to have like certain world events take place not take place, but then have Edward Snowden's thing take place is like such a weird picking and choosing of things,
sure,
that actually happened.
Absolutely. Oh my God, Mike, do you hear that?
What's that?
Oh my God, is that Extreme Waves? Is that
Extreme Waves
coming in to play us out of the podcast?
I suppose so. Does that mean I have to go swim off or something, or walk off with some sort of purpose as the camera pans up to reveal that we're in New York the whole time?
And that this podcast has been directed by Paul Greengrass?
Yes, which is the name of the operation where post-show recaps is now, I don't know, killing off other podcasts.
Oh my God, so dark, so dark. No, but that does signal the end of the Jason Bourne podcast here. Mike, do you have anything else to add?
Just a couple of other random little tidbits. One, Riz Ahmed's character, the whole idea of Deep Dream, as I said before, I think it's interesting that we incorporate startups and social media platforms into the Bourne franchise, since we really didn't get to touch on that before. And by the way, speaking completely tangentially once more, Riz Ahmed, HBO's The Night Of. I'm behind on it, but if you have not seen it and you're into these sort of like...
Very compelling,
dark, gritty types of mediums, definitely watch it. The other thing I will say, we didn't talk a lot about shaky cam, which I feel like is the trademark of the Bourne franchise.
I try not to talk about shaky cam because I have motion sickness and I'll puke everywhere.
Yeah, because I know you did tweet a couple weeks before we recorded this about how when you initially saw The Blair Witch Project, which is not a favorite movie of mine, that you had walked out because you were just overcome by the motion sickness. I will ask, when you saw Jason Bourne this time, did you start getting those feelings once more? Did you bring Dramamine on hand to take during Jason Bourne?
Look, I'm an adult now, okay? Like, I can handle it. I'm not going to puke in the theater like I was going to puke in the theater during The Blair Witch Project. Shigoy, let's not talk about Blair Witch anymore. That being said, it's not my favorite style. I don't love it. I don't like it. I like a little more stability in my shots.
Yeah, I'd agree, though. I think there is something that's more, I don't want to use the term personable with that choice, but it almost seems like it's like shades of a school project. Like, I used to make movies with my friends in high school, and there was one that culminated in a Bourne-esque chase through the streets of our city, and we had the handheld, and we were bouncing up and down. And yes, it was a little sickening in more ways than one, but that being said, it sort of like almost puts you in the seat of someone who's running along with them. So I can understand the artistic merit behind the choice, but that being said, when you do it for a good, I don't know, like two-thirds of your movie, it can get a little nauseating.
All right, Mike, if there's nothing else, I think that now is as good a time as any to end this thing.
Definitely.
All right, Mike, what else is going on with you these days?
You can find me on post-show recaps. A couple weeks ago, I did the last few episodes of Orange is the New Black Season 4, a very contentious season. I got to sit down with Jessica Lees, Taylor Cotter, Lita Brillman. We had a great time talking about some very, very dark material there as well. Josh, I have a feeling this will not be the last time for a while that you and I are talking about something, though the next time we talk about something might be a little bit lighter material. But yeah, fall TV is coming back into swing, and with it comes a lot of stuff on post-show recap. Yeah. So definitely stay subscribed.
Definitely stay subscribed and check out the other movie podcasts that we've got going on right now. Subscribe to everything. postshowrecaps.com/iTunes is how you can subscribe there. Hashtag time. I like SpyCon. I thought that was fun.
SpyCon. Pokeborn.
Pokeborn. Either one of those will do. Tweet that to myself and Mike. I'm at Rand Howard. Mike is at A Mike Bloom Type. We will talk to you guys again soon. Take care, everybody. Goodbye. I would stand in line for this. There's always room in life for this.